But so many, in fact, as Maria Ressa and others have in fact seen. So I would say that we in the Philippines are very grateful for the international support that was shown in this effort to bring a human rights violator to The Hague. And I think the other thing is that we've got to have all those countries that haven't signed yet to sign the Rome Statute, and that includes the United States. There have been quite a number of people who have violated human rights, engaged in widespread systematic repression that have to be brought to justice. On the part of people in the United States, there has to be that pressure to get the United States to move and sign the Rome Statute establishing the ICC.
Weldon Bello, we want to thank you so much for being with you. Look forward to seeing you when you're here in New York. Weldon is acclaimed Filipino scholar, activist, co-founder of Focus on the Global South, served in the House of Representatives of the Philippines, key figure in the international movement to restore democracy in the Philippines. His new book, Global Battlefields. I'm Mimi Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for Democracy Now!
I'm Naomi Klein, and you are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM.
KBOO's Metal Marathon, the Metal March, is back once again. And that means brand new metal merch. Go to kboo.fm/metal to check out all KBOO's new metal merch, featuring exclusive artwork provided by local tattoo artist and musician at Unicron Artworks. This year's Metal Marathon is live on KBOO, Friday, March 14th at 8 p.m. through Saturday, March 15th at 6 a.m. Get your very own limited edition 2025 Metal March Metal Merch and listen to every installment of the Metal Marathon at kboo.fm/metal and support metal on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
This is KBOO Portland. From its founding, KBOO's purpose has been to serve as a community-driven alternative to mainstream media. In a new year, with numerous executive orders from a new presidential administration and the rise of misinformation, KBOO affirms its duty to serve its community. KBOO, its programmers, volunteers, and staff do this by bringing you accurate information, by giving space to underrepresented voices, and by uplifting arts and culture. In these uncertain times, KBOO seeks to be a guiding light for those who are scared, those who are affected, and those who are fighting the good fight. KBOO stands with the immigrant community, the LGBTQIA+ community, the disability community, and all of those affected by the new administration. We stand here at 90.7 FM in Portland, 104.3 FM in the Corvallis-Philomath area, 91.9 FM in Hood River, and at KBOO.FM.
Support for KBOO comes from KBOO members and Grendel's Coffee Shop, located at East Burnside and 8th Avenue in Portland, featuring coffee, tea, sandwiches, and more. Information at grendelspdx.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the Oregon Court of Appeals rules the voter-passed gun control measure 114 is constitutional.
Conservation groups rally in Salem for Wildlife Lobby Day.
And in national news, the EPA will close its environmental justice offices.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, March 12th, 2025. I'm Dave Johnson.
And I'm Josh Salem. The Oregon Court of Appeals ruled that Oregon's voter pass gun control measure 114 is constitutional. The measure was passed in 2022, but it had been tied up in court cases. It bans the purchase of magazines that hold more than 10 rounds of ammunition and requires anyone purchasing a firearm to have a background check and permit. The law also closes a loophole, which allows gun transfers to go forward if a background check takes longer than 3 days. The ruling overturns an earlier 2023 decision by an Eastern Oregon judge that said the measure violated the state constitution. Oregon Attorney General Dan Rayfield said in a statement, quote, "Oregonians voted for this. This measure gives us the tools to make sure gun buyers go through background checks and get proper permits, helping to keep firearms out of the wrong hands and making our communities safer," end quote. Tony Aiello is lead counsel against the measure. He said, quote, "Today, Measure 114 has turned millions of Oregonians into criminals because their right to bear arms has been erased by Oregon's judiciary," end quote. The law won't go into effect immediately. Opponents have 35 days to appeal the ruling to the state Supreme Court, which they say they will do. The state Supreme Court could decide to review the case or allow the appeals court decision to stand, and a hold on the measure would likely stay in place during that process.
Board members from Clark County Transit, CTRAN, delayed a vote on whether they would support a light rail connection between Vancouver and Portland on the replacement interstate bridge. It's a delay, not an outright no, but it's an important vote. Light rail is a part of the current design and public transit component of the bridge, allows for greater federal funding for the project. Vancouver foots most of the bill for the bus system in the county, 57% of the budget, but the smaller Clark County towns like Battleground and Camas oppose adding light rail to the bridge. At a meeting of the Clark County Transit Board last night, people came out to testify against light rail, saying that it would be like TriMet trams in Portland. They didn't want it. They worried about the potential cost and whether it would be safe. Light rail would be funded through a 0.2% increase in sales tax. Younger folks testified in favor of saying the current transit system is inadequate for commuters and that they need to think about the future of the region and its growing population. The vote is scheduled to come up at the next CTRAN board meeting on April 15th.
Oregon conservation groups are at the state capitol today for Wildlife Lobby Day, advocating for science-based wildlife management on 6 bills. The bills aim to foster coexistence between wildlife and people. Isabel Charlet reports.
Today, Oregon conservation groups are headed to the state capitol for Wildlife Lobby Day. The organizations, all part of the Oregon Wildlife Coalition, will meet legislators to advocate for 4 bills that support science-based coexistence with wildlife. Srishti Kamal of the Western Environmental Law Center highlights the 1% for wildlife bill, which would raise the state transient lodging tax by 1% up to 2.5%. Funds would help the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife implement the state wildlife action plan to protect imperiled species and habitats. Kamal says the plan currently has no funding from the state.
Even though we have a Democratic majority in our legislature this session, unfortunately, wildlife falls at the bottom of everyone's priority list.
One bill would help landowners use non-lethal tools to share land with beavers. Another seeks about $1 million to fund 4 wildlife coexistence biologists, a public education campaign, and a grant program for wildlife rehabilitation centers. Along with supporting 4 bills, the coalition opposes 2 bills this session, both focused on carnivore management. One would reimburse ranchers up to 5 times the market value for livestock killed by wolves, despite Oregon already compensating the full market value. Kamal notes research shows such payments don't increase tolerance and may have the opposite effect.
We fear that this will actually increase intolerance for the species and lead to more actions like poaching of wolves, which we are already seeing a significant uptick in the state.
Another bill opposed by the coalition would legalize using hounds to hunt cougars, an idea that Kamal says is inhumane and has already been voted down by Oregonians. Kamal emphasizes that the coalition, along with the bills they support, aim to foster coexistence between wildlife and people. She says Oregon's policies need to reflect the vital role many species play in supporting ecosystems and humans through climate change and wildfires. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
The Environmental Protection Agency plans to close all 10 of the agency's environmental justice regional offices, as well as its Washington, D.C. hub, addressing the issue. The offices focused on addressing the systemic injustices faced by low-income minority communities across the United States. EPA Administrator Lee Zeldin said that eliminating the offices would help fulfill President Donald Trump's, quote, mandate to end, quote, forced discrimination programs. Zeldin likened the office's goal of addressing pollution in regions like Cancer Alley, an 85-mile stretch of land in Louisiana where the high number of petrochemical plants has been linked to higher than average cancer rates in predominantly black and poor communities, to discrimination, apparently discrimination against the wealthy, households, and white Americans. Margie Ault, director of the Climate Action Campaign, said, quote, Lee Zeldin's idea of accountability is apparently to create a world of hurt for the most vulnerable while spitting in the face of the law and giving wealthy corporate interests the ability to pollute at will, end quote. Zeldin also announced that he was canceling 400 grants for environmental justice and diversity initiatives, despite numerous court orders against Trump's attempt to freeze federal funding that has already been appropriated.
The Oregon legislature is considering a bill to ban greenwashing across the state. Greenwashing is false or misleading environmental marketing, making a practice or product seem better for the climate than it really is. Senate Bill 680 would make greenwashing illegal under the Unlawful Trade Practices Act and fine those who violate it in the amount of $200. Lawmakers sponsoring the bill say greenwashing gets in the way of creating effective climate action. Senator Jeff Golden from Ashland is a sponsor of the bill. He said in a February work session that greenwashing, quote, promotes false solutions to the climate crisis that distract from and delay concrete and credible action, end quote. Environmental and consumer advocates express support for the bill, while business interests oppose it, saying banning greenwashing is redundant under state law. Advocates for the bill have pointed to Northwest Natural as a prime example of greenwashing. The gas utility is in multiple lawsuits with Multnomah County and its customers for alleged greenwashing tactics.
Energy-efficient housing doesn't have to be as expensive as you might think. Boston's Kenzie Project blends cutting-edge energy efficiency with affordability. Dr. Anthony Lisowitz has more of the story with Climate Connections.
Lisowitz, and this is Climate Connections. In Boston, a new affordable apartment complex for seniors demonstrates that building climate-friendly housing does not need to break the bank. Beverly Craig of the Massachusetts Clean Energy Center says the Kenzie at Bartlett Station is a 50-unit complex built to maximize energy efficiency.
So this is designed to the Passive House standard, which is basically the most efficient green building standard that you can get to in the world.
The Kenzie is well insulated with an advanced ventilation system to maximize airflow, and it's powered by all-electric systems, including heat pumps for heating and cooling. That may sound like a costly way to build.
The perception was that it's really expensive to build that building up front.
So Craig's group awarded grants to the Kenzie and seven other affordable housing projects to help them build to Passive House standards and track the cost. They found that on average, constructing them cost only about 2.5% more than building similar projects to lower standards, and the Kenzie cost only 1% more. And operating the buildings will likely be cheaper because they use so much less energy. So she says creating climate-friendly housing can be affordable, too. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
The White House downplays the stock market plunge, calling it transitionary. House Republicans pass a stopgap funding bill. And the Department of Education is the latest agency to see mass layoffs. With those stories and more, it's Alex Gonzalez with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Some people are going to make great deals by buying stocks and bonds and all the things they're buying. I think we're going to have an economy that's a real economy, not a fake economy. It was a fake economy.
President Donald Trump is now saying there won't be a recession after refusing to rule one out Sunday on Fox. All three major indexes dropped sharply after his weekend comments and after he threatened but then walked back a doubling of tariffs on Canadian steel and aluminum. The White House now argues the U.S. is experiencing a period of economic transition and calls the market volatility just blips. But Trump's approval rating is already taking a hit as voters across the country grow concerned. House Republicans passed a stopgap funding bill Tuesday in an effort to avoid an end-of-the-week government shutdown. Jared Golden of Maine was the only Democrat to vote yes, and Thomas Massey of Kentucky, the only Republican no vote. Speaker Mike Johnson is pressing for Democratic support in the Senate.
Falls on the desk of Chuck Schumer. He must determine whether he wants to fund the government, do the responsible thing, or whether he wants to shut the government down.
The U.S. will be restoring military aid and intelligence sharing with Ukraine after the nation agreed to a 30-day ceasefire proposal. Secretary of State Marco Rubio says Russia should accept it now that Ukraine has.
Today, we made an offer that the Ukrainians have accepted, which is to enter into a ceasefire and into immediate negotiations to end this conflict in a way that's enduring and sustainable and accounts for their interests, their security, their ability to prosper as a nation.
Ukraine targeted Moscow with drones Tuesday. Russia has begun attacks intended to retake territory in its Kursk border region. France and other European nations have begun meetings on assembling a possible peacekeeping force. The Department of Education is starting its expected mass layoffs, with a third of the 4,000 employees getting the axe. Janine Nelson with the NAACP Legal Defense Fund says Trump's plan to eliminate the agency is a mistake.
Our country is at an inflection point, and so is American education. We can build a system in which all students can thrive or allow our schools to remain spaces of division and inequality.
A new report commissioned by faith leaders highlights moral issues in administration plans to cut federal programs to pay for extending tax cuts that mostly go to the wealthy. Author Karen Dolan with the Institute for Policy Studies points to a House budget resolution that would slash $900 billion for Medicaid.
92% of people who receive Medicaid work either full-time or half-time or have disabilities, are over age 65, are taking care of children or elderly adults, or are attending school.
Republicans argue the tax cuts boost the economy. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after the newscast for Making Contact. At 6, it's Alternative Radio. Then at 7, Hard Knocks Radio. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with an overnight low of about 43 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be rainy with a high of 47. Today in history, in 1968, the island nation of Mauritius gains its independence from the UK. The quote of the day is from American playwright Edward Albee, who said, quote, "Remember one thing about democracy. We can have anything we want. At the end of the same time, we always end up with exactly what we deserve."
Rural schools in Alaska need millions in funding to address infrastructure that's been neglected. That's according to a new investigation looking at decades of old data. With that story and more, it's Brian Bull with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. There are 128 open schools in rural Alaska, and the state owns just under half of them. Reporter Emily Schwing dug through data and found decades of neglect and lacking accountability that's put students, teachers, and staff at risk.
Most school districts in Alaska have access to money that doesn't come from the state, but rural school districts are different.
We do not have a tax base. Most of our community members are families. They live a subsistence lifestyle.
Madeline Aguillard is the superintendent of 9 schools scattered across 12,000 square miles in Alaska's interior. It's roughly the size of Maryland. Her district relies on the state to help pay for everything from textbooks to sewer lines.
The state does have an obligation to provide a public education. Providing that education would also mean assistance with providing the physical space.
Since 1998, Alaska has only funded about 14% of nearly 1,800 project proposals from rural school districts. The result? Exposed electrical wiring and malfunctioning fire alarms. In one case, the school's pipes froze and broke, so for most of the last school year, kids rode a four-wheeler, known as the bathroom bus, home twice a day to relieve themselves.
I think the evidence speaks for itself.
Bryce Edgman, an Alaska native, is Speaker of the Alaska State House of Representatives.
These bright young children show up every morning to go to school in a building that's not fit for even anything but being ready to be demolished.
Regulations say the state is responsible for major maintenance and construction for buildings it owns. Alaska's Education Commissioner Dina Bishop says it's not that simple.
The funding for those projects comes from the state of Alaska's legislature that would provide funding.
This year, requests for investments in school infrastructure statewide come close to $800 million as a budget deficit looms in Alaska. And lawmakers in Juneau are debating over how to balance the budget and fund education.
Emily Schwing reports for KYUK. Support for this reporting comes from ProPublica and the USC Annenberg Center for Health Journalism's 2024 National Fellowship. Indigenous business owners are gathering in a major conference in the Mountain West region this week to discuss ways to bring more business opportunities to Native communities. The Mountain West News Bureau's Yvette Fernandez has more.
Thousands of Indigenous entrepreneurs are gathered in Las Vegas for the National Center for American Indian Enterprise Development Conference, the biggest of its kind in the country. The acting director of the Federal Bureau of Indian Affairs, Brian Mercier, spoke to the group. He acknowledged many conference-goers are concerned about Trump administration budget cuts, but said the new administration is also working to enhance opportunities for Indigenous businesses and communities. He told the crowd that energy and economic development are on the table, along with funding law enforcement. He went on to say he's encouraging everybody he speaks with to, quote, jump at these opportunities and work with this administration. Mercier is a member of the Confederated Tribes of the Grand Ronde Community of Oregon. He said in his role, he will continue to advocate for prioritizing Indigenous cultural perspectives in federal policy. For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Yvette Fernandez.
And it was roughly 5 years ago this week that COVID-19 came to North America. A Princeton University study has shown that Native people saw greater rates of COVID-19 deaths due to limited access to high-quality medical care, poverty, and crowded living conditions. Tribes shut down many operations and organized vaccine clinics and pop-up testing sites to protect elders and children. This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull in the KLCC studios in Eugene, Oregon.
Groups organizing for social justice are warning about the rise of white Christian nationalism across the country. Among the states, research shows Washington has one of the lowest rates of this ideology. But those voicing concerns say that isn't a reason to ignore it. Isabel Charlet has more on the story.
Nationwide, it's estimated about one-third of Americans either adhere to Christian nationalist ideals or sympathize with them. Groups that work for social justice in Washington state are organizing to counter what they see as a movement harmful to democracy. At this weekend's Peace and Justice Action Conference in Spokane, the keynote speaker is Aaron Scott. He's the author of Bring Back Your People, 10 Ways Regular Folks Can Put a Dent in White Christian Nationalism. It's estimated 16% of people in Washington support Christian nationalist ideas. Although that's hardly a majority, Scott says the movement should not be disregarded.
We can't afford to say, well, we're not going to really deal with that stuff. That's a side conversation, because clearly we are now in a moment where it is not a side conversation. It is the central conversation.
Scott says Christian nationalist groups embed in rural areas, building churches and securing funds to win local elections. Their beliefs often appear as anti-immigrant and anti-LGBTQ. He says this ideology thrives where voter suppression and disengagement are high, and encourages people to stay engaged in their communities. Christian nationalists want the U.S. to be declared a Christian nation with laws based on their far-right values. Though these ideas can seem threatening, Scott says arguing with strangers is usually not an effective way to change someone's mind. Instead, he suggests having direct, thoughtful conversations within trusting relationships, reinforcing their values of honesty and compassion.
You can do things like point to the way this person lives their lives and the values that you know they hold, and highlight, like, this does not seem aligned with this.
Scott, who also works with the Episcopal Church, emphasizes the core of Christianity runs counter to the ideas of Christian nationalism. He says many Christian groups recognize the movement provides cover for white supremacy and are concerned about the threat it may pose to their religious communities as well as democracy. Scott adds it takes time and commitment to counter extreme ideologies. I'm Isabel Charlet, Washington News Service.
The Trump administration is continuing to attempt the largest deportation effort in U.S. history. The alleged justification is that it will address the country's economic woes and increase job opportunities for citizens. But researchers say there's clear data to show a mass exodus would have the opposite economic effect, particularly in states that rely heavily on the migrant workforce. Judith Ruiz Branch reports.
As nationwide deportation efforts continue, new research examines the labor market of a past president to help forecast what could happen if President Donald Trump follows through on his plans. The Obama administration deported more than 3 million people. Trump says he wants to deport more to increase jobs for U.S. citizens. A new report from University of Colorado economic professor Chloe East says U.S. presidents have a long history of blaming immigration for the country's economic troubles, even when research shows the opposite. He says mass deportations and raids incite fear and leave vacant jobs that U.S. citizens are unlikely to fill.
We really don't see this substitution between unauthorized immigrants and U.S. foreign workers in the way that we're promised we will by politicians. And in fact, the effect sort of goes even beyond this lack of substitution.
She says the industries most likely to be affected are construction, agriculture, manufacturing, and service jobs, with positions that tend to be lower paid, tougher, or more dangerous. He says keeping these jobs filled actually helps to increase U.S. labor opportunities. About 17% of Illinois workers are immigrants, including some 55,000 seasonal farm workers. Inconsistencies about who exactly is being targeted by ICE agents raises concerns about racial profiling. A leaked memo shows efforts have pivoted from focusing on people committing crimes to migrant families and unaccompanied children with no criminal histories. Migrant workers make up about 20% of the U.S. workforce. East says it's striking to see history repeating itself.
Whether we're looking a few decades back or 100 years back, the results are very consistent and very clear that mass deportations are not the solution to any economic troubles.
While deportation data since Trump took office has yet to be released, the majority of news releases on the ICE website involve people from Mexico or Latin America. ICE says it will release updated deportation data every quarter. For Illinois News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch.
KBOO News poet Don Raphael knows when to say thanks and when to say no thanks.
Secretary of State Rubio told Polish Prime Minister Tusk he should thank President Musk for Starlink. VP Vance told President Zelensky he should thank Trump for the military aid President Biden sent. I thank Wall Street for responding negatively to Trump's unpredictable, inconsistent impulses, since only big money can rein Donnie in. I'm thankful Donnie is in his second term, because that means he won't have another. Or does it? Disappointment is probably not the opposite of gratitude, but I'm thoroughly disappointed in our new city council for approving PGE killing almost 400 trees in Forest Park to put in new power lines. I'm not disappointed in PGE because I expect them to lie, saying the power lines are for our safety when, like most everything in the world, the new lines are for industry. Nor can I be disappointed in the ultra-wealthy causing deficits at the city, state, and national levels through their avarice and selfishness. I am thankful for what I have, for the chance to make my local world a little better. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
Now we go to Pearl Stark from KPOV Bend with The Point Puzzle, the weekly radio brain teaser. This week's theme is birds. Let's listen.
It's time for the puzzle.
Last week, I asked you to start with something that changed this weekend. Swap two adjacent letters and then move one of them back one place in the alphabet to get a guess for the answer. Well, the guess is surmise. Start with sunrise, swap and move one back to get surmise. Our winner this week is Daryl McKeel, who listens to KYAQ in Newport, Oregon.
Here comes the
sound. Here comes the sun and I say it's all right. Oh, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was a tricky one last week, so hopefully this will be a little more straightforward. Send me a bird with a silent first letter. If you pronounced the first letter instead of the second one, phonetically, you might be asking for more cheese. So again, send a bird with a silent first letter, but if you pronounced the first letter instead of the second one, phonetically, you might be asking for more cheese. When you have an answer, send your name, your answer, and the station on which you hear the puzzle to puzzle@kpov.org. I'll select one winner from among any answers received by this Saturday.
Smile with the rising sun. Three little birds. It's by my doorstep. Singing sweet songs.
This has been Pearl Stark with your point puzzle for the week of March 10th. The Point Puzzle is produced at KPOV, High Desert Community Radio.
You're listening to KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, March 12, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael, the producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Isabel Charlet, Judith Ruiz Branch, Alex Gonzalez, Brian Bull, Pearl Stark, and Dr. Anthony Lazowitz. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of the newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Dave Johnson.
And I'm Josh Salem. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become